Welcome, everyone, to this month's edition of Outbeat Now. If you're a first-time listener, Outbeat Now airs on the fourth Sunday of each month and is part of Outbeat Radio, a program you'll find here only on KRCB Radio. We're a public affairs show for and about the LGBT community, and it includes the Outbeat Youth segment. I'm Greg Morali, and I'm here with co-hosts Jeff Basham and Joel Bellagio, and tonight we're going to be talking about safety issues while out and about in our community. In the first half of the hour, we're going to start off with a conversation with Officer Albie Esparza, who is the spokesperson for the San Francisco Police Department, and we'll hear his thoughts about safety while visiting the Castro. And on the Outbeat Youth segment, we're going to be talking about how to maintain safety and privacy while using social networking sites like Facebook and MySpace. And you know, no matter how old you are, if you're using these social networking sites, you won't want to miss the ideas and tips that we have for you. But first, here's Joel Bellagio with this week's Outbeat Radio News.
This is Outbeat Radio News. I'm Joel Bellagio. In international news, the Scotland Herald is reporting that senior church leaders and a cross-party coalition of members of the Scottish Parliament are calling for a change in the law in Scotland to give same-sex couples full marriage rights, and polling evidence suggests a majority of Scots would back the move. Since 2005, same-sex couples have been able to enter into civil partnerships which provide the same legal rights as marriage. However, they are not officially termed marriage, and civil partnerships may not be conducted on religious premises or by religious celebrants. The pressure for full marriage equality comes just after a UK politician predicted that Great Britain would grant gays and lesbians the right to marry. Meanwhile, in the United States, Senate Armed Services Committee Chairman Carl Levine was reported in the Washington Blade as stating that he expects the full Senate to take up the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell in September after lawmakers return from August recess. Advocates have been anticipating a vote on the fiscal year 2011 defense authorization bill, the vehicle to which repeal language is attached, after the Senate Armed Services Committee attached the provision to the bill and reported out the legislation to the floor. Levine said the quickest possible route for passing repeal in the Senate is now reaching an agreement this month to take up the defense bill shortly after lawmakers return from August break. And the Great Falls, Montana Tribune is reporting that a civil liberties organization has filed a lawsuit against the state of Montana demanding that it provide the same legal protections to gay couples that are given to married couples. The ACLU filed a lawsuit in Helena on behalf of seven gay couples living in the state. The plaintiffs say the state law denies them the same rights as married couples when it comes to health care, end-of-life decisions, and inheritance. They are asking a judge to require the state to make laws and regulations giving gay couples and their families the same protections as married couples. Meanwhile, a new California poll reported in the Los Angeles Times indicates that one in four Californians have become more supportive of gay rights over the last 5 years, compared with 8% who said they had become more opposed, according to a survey released last week. The poll, conducted in English and Spanish by the Washington, D.C.-based nonprofit Public Religion Research Institute, examined the attitude of Californians towards same-sex marriage 2 years after the passage of Proposition 8. An overwhelming majority, 75%, said they favored laws that would protect gays and lesbians from job discrimination, while 69% said they supported allowing homosexuals to openly serve in the military, and 56% favored allowing gay couples to adopt children. If a vote similar to that on Proposition 8 were held tomorrow, a majority of Californians said they would cast ballots in favor of allowing gay and lesbian couples to marry. The survey comes as California awaits a decision from a U.S. District Court judge on whether Proposition 8 violates the U.S. Constitution. Meanwhile, closer to home, Sonoma County has been named the second gayest metropolitan area in the nation. That's according to a demographer at the University of California, Los Angeles, who crunched census numbers to find areas with the largest percentage of residents living in same-sex relationships. Not surprisingly, San Francisco led the list with 12.4 same-sex couples per 1,000 households. The Santa Rosa metropolitan area was number 2 with 7.63 gay couples per 1,000 households, a rate 56% greater than the national average. And there you have it. This has been Outbeat Radio News. I'm Joel Bellagio.
Welcome back to Outbeat Now. I'm Jeff Basham. Last month's Pride celebration in San Francisco was disrupted by 3 incidents of violence, including a shooting that occurred on the night of Pink Saturday, the night before Pride, a beating of a man in front of the 440 Club, and then a brawl the next day just as the Pride Festival at City Hall was getting started. While these incidents are not common for a Pride celebration, they caused us to wonder about safety while visiting the Castro.
Well, Jeff, you were at Pink Party this year. What was it like for you? Did you feel unsafe that night?
I was there in face as Sister Demanda Refund, working the gate at Castro and Market, and I didn't feel particularly unsafe. We had both plainclothes security officers, undercover SFPD walking around, and also uniformed officers. And Greg, I know you visit the Castro a few times a year. How safe do you feel when you are in the Castro?
Well, I'm down there about once a month, and I have to say I've never really felt threatened at all. I've been there both daytimes and night times. I always see a lot of San Francisco PD officers around, but I also know from attending Pink Party myself, I mean, there's a lot of people there. A lot of people, and everybody's drinking, and there's a lot of out-of-town people. But I have to say I was really surprised about the things that happened this year. It just seemed really unusual.
Yeah, you're right. I know that there were about 100,000 people there. And from working the gate, I feel that a lot of the straight people who are not part of the GLBT community that were there to just people watch. And I don't know what their intent was, but it seemed a little suspicious to me, especially with what happened. So anyway, well, we decided to check in about safety with the San Francisco Police Department and about the events that happened at Pride, as well as about general safety concerns while visiting the Castro. And with us tonight is Officer Albie Esparza, spokesperson for the San Francisco Police Department and a proud member of the gay community. Officer Esparza, welcome to Outbeat Now.
Hi, how are you?
We're doing great. Thanks for coming on the show tonight. We'd like to start with a question about you. Can you tell us about your role with the San Francisco Police Department and how long you've worked for the department?
I've been with the San Francisco Police Department since April of 2002, a little bit over 8 years. And my role currently is assigned to the chief's office in the media relations unit as the spokesperson.
So how are you liking that?
It's a great experience. I enjoy working with the media and being able to speak with the media about events going on in the department and in the city.
Now, you're also one of the proud gay members of the San Francisco Police Department. What's that been like for you?
It's been a great experience. I've had nothing but great interaction with all my peers and coworkers and supervisors in the department, beginning from the academy, through my field training, into my probationary period, and every assignment I've had. I've had a great experience with the department.
That's really great to hear. So we want to focus tonight on 3 notable incidents of violence that were reported in the media that happened around this year's Pride celebration. The first and the most serious was the shooting on Pink Saturday. And on the same night, a gay man was beaten after a confrontation in front of Club 440. And the third incident happened on Sunday after the parade with a group of women. Based on your experience with San Francisco Pride celebrations, how unusual are these events?
It is fairly unusual. I mean, for the most part, Pride events are safe. They've been safe in years past. And the events that occurred this year were extremely rare. It's really hard to say if they're connected to Pride because violence occurs anywhere, at any time. But it is rare to have such events at our Pride event. You know, the shooting homicide that we had at Castro and Market, I believe that was stemmed from prior contacts. I don't have all the information as far as the investigation. It is an ongoing investigation, so I have limited access to what actually went on. But my understanding is that it was had something to do with previous encounters, not that night, but somehow it was related to the parties that they had known each other, as well as I don't have any information as far as what happened at the 440 event, 440 Castro assault, and the event that happened at Civic Center, the brawl, if you will, between the police and the females. I don't have specific details as far as what had happened or what triggered that that incident.
Right.
I do know that when there is a large gathering of any group and there's alcohol involved, the potential for violence is raised.
Sure.
And so that's probably what we're seeing is, you know, a mixture of different people, alcohol involved, and when people are intoxicated, their reasoning and their is not quite so clear.
Right. And that is a pretty unique event. You know, Pink Saturday is an example where people are allowed to drink in the streets.
Correct.
What's your guesstimate on the number of people that attend or have been attending that event?
Our guesstimation for the Pride weekend was about 500,000 people. For Pink Saturday, I don't know if it was that high, but I know that it was at least, you know, 50,000 to 100,000 people. And that is quite significantly a large amount of people for such a small area.
Do you agree that there's a lot of people from out of town that attend that event?
Right. We do have a lot of people that come in from out of town. San Francisco is a world destination for gay pride. And we welcome everyone to come to San Francisco. We want people to come to San Francisco, and we want them to have a great time and experience the city and all it has to offer. But, you know, we also want everyone to do it safely. We want them to do it responsibly at the same time. But you're correct. A lot of people do come in from out of town.
Well, you've attended Pink Saturday events in the past, either on duty or off duty, right?
Yes.
You know, what's your feeling? Is it getting too big?
I don't know if it's getting too big. I've been both working the event in the years past and I've gone as an attendee in my civilian off-duty time. I know the event is very crowded. It's very big. I don't know necessarily if it's too big, but I do know that we should work together with more community organizations to try to make sure that this event or any future events are safe.
Right.
I know other cities have they host large events also and do so also safely. So I don't think it's necessarily the size. I just think there needs to be more safety precautions and just identify problematic individuals early on in the night and deal with them appropriately. For example, drunk in public, if someone's a little bit too intoxicated, you know, they should be removed from the crowd to avoid any conflict.
Yeah, right. So now next year, what is the department thinking about? Are they going to let the event happen?
You know, I have not heard anything about canceling or shutting down the event. To my knowledge, it's not going to be. To my knowledge, it's going to continue. Again, these incidents of violence were very not typical of a Pride and Pink Saturday. So it's just an unfortunate incident that happened this year. But there is no plan to cancel them so far.
Well, I'm sure that'll be great news to all of our listeners who like to venture down there on that night, and it certainly is a good time. I mean, it's
absolutely
it's a huge party and it's a great time, and it's I guess in my mind it's kind of surprising that more things haven't happened in the past there, given the number of people and the wide range of ages that are there, and of course as you mentioned before the alcohol.
Correct. We you know for the most part Pride is a happy celebration type event that everyone comes to enjoy and have fun. So, you know, people come to the city with a mindset of enjoying their night and partying and having a great time. So that, I think that's also why you've never seen level of violence before. Like any event, You know, there's going to be your pickpockets and your pushing matches. But again, that comes with any large event. That can be a concert or anything, but it just comes with the event. But as far as the violence goes, yeah, it was very rare, and hopefully it does not happen again in years to come.
We'll keep our fingers crossed.
Well, we'd like to shift gears now and talk a little bit about the Castro area in general and some thoughts for those in Sonoma County who might travel down to the city for a visit. What's your sense about the overall safety in the Castro?
The Castro District is relatively safe. It's not immune to violence, though. It's not immune to crime like every other neighborhood. There is instances that do happen. But for the most part, it is a very safe neighborhood. You have to, when you go out, you just have to be aware of your surroundings, be aware of who you're talking to, be aware of any groups of people that you might think are suspicious, like any other place, especially when you go out and, you know, you go to the bars and go clubbing, you know, and again, alcohol gets involved. Just make sure that you're with a group of friends or group of people that you know that can take care of one another should someone get a little too intoxicated. But it is a safe neighborhood, but there are some incidents of violence or crime that do occur, just like in the Marina or in Pacific Heights or Union Square. You know, I mean,
sure.
Every neighborhood has the potential for violence or crime. So we just urge people to go out. We urge them to enjoy the city, but also do it responsibly and just be aware of your surroundings.
Sure.
Well, I've read and heard stories about the Castro in the late 70s and 80s where gay men in particular had to be concerned about gay bashings by straight people. Does that type of thing still happen in the Castro?
You know, we haven't had a lot of instances of gay bashing in the Castro. I mean, there has been prior incidents. I wouldn't say it's a problem in the neighborhood. As you know, the elements for a hate crime, you know, they have to say something or utter something regarding a person's race, sexual orientation prior to the assault to make it a hate crime. But we do have, I mean, there are fights in the Castro, there are robberies and assaults, but there hasn't been too much as far as hate crime recently.
Well, that's good to hear. And I know that, you know, police are in uniform, on foot, walking around. I see the police specials out there. How heavily patrolled is the Castro?
The Castro District is assigned a car sector that the police department staffs every day and every night. Normally, it's a two-officer unit, or if it might be a one-officer minimum, but there are also the patrol specials that are out there. Working the clubs and walking around the neighborhood, as well as sometimes there's a foot beat or a bicycle officer assigned to that area in addition to the radio car. So the Castro, I mean, you'll see cops walking up and down the street, driving up and down throughout the night, and the Castro is pretty well policed.
In our research for this show, we've been hearing stories and reading stories about the bars and drugs. Are gay men ever victimized by having someone spike their drink with GHB or anything like that?
There have been cases of gay men that have had GHB in their drinks. I wouldn't say it's an out-of-control problem. I know that there has been incidents here and there. The problem is that sometimes people don't report that to the police, and it's very important that they do. Not only for the person's safety, but also for statistics, and you know, we need to investigate who these people are, identify them if it is a problem. But what we're seeing actually more now in Castro is these hookup date, robberies or burglaries, where people go online to a website, meet somebody, and the person comes over to their house. Once they're at their house, they either spike the drink at the house and the person subsequently passes out, and the suspect will steal from that person. That is what we're seeing more than spiking someone's drinks at a bar. We've had some reports about that, but a lot of people are too embarrassed, to contact police because of the, they meet someone online and bring them over to their house. So, we're here to provide a service for the community. We don't, we don't care how the circumstances that got you in the situation. We're here to help you, and we want people to know that if they're a victim of a crime, we want them to contact police. And put that aside. Don't be embarrassed. Don't be shy, or don't feel intimidated because the police are going to judge you.
Right.
We're not here for that. We're here to help our community, and we want to make sure that we provide a service.
Right.
To our members of our community, and so, people need to report that to the police.
And along those lines, in terms of the fear of calling the police, I think what I've heard is that people are fearful of being judged, that straight officers may not necessarily understand them. Are there a large number of gay officers that are assigned to the Castro Beat area?
The thing is that our police department has at least 10% gay and lesbian officers out of a force of 2,300 plus. So we have a good amount of representation in the department. There are a lot of officers at Mission Station that are gay or lesbian. My thing is people should call the police. Our officers, even if they're straight or gay, our officers, when we go through the academy, we get a cultural sensitivity training. All of our officers are understanding of every community in our city that we serve,
mm-hmm.
and people should not feel intimidated or judged. Simply based on their orientation or any other minority or anything like that. People should contact the police, and they should do so comfortably. We are there to help them, and we do work for the public. So, like I said, all of our officers do a great job of responding to the scene, and a victim is a victim. We don't look at anything else. When you're a victim of a crime, we have a job to do.
Right.
Getting back to talking about safety in bars or clubs, what do you recommend in terms of drink safety while someone is visiting a bar?
When you go to a bar, it's a good habit to practice to keep your drink in your hand at all times. It might be a pain, but, in the end, it's good practice. If you're going to go dance, have a friend watch it. Or you might want to drink the drink down so you can set it down and you can just go dance and not worry about the drink. I would be very hesitant of leaving any drink unattended, whether it be on the counter, whether it be at a table, or, if you have to use a restroom, take it with you. It doesn't sound pleasant, but, just keep the drink with you, at least where you can visually see the drink, or have a friend hold your drink. But, just keep constant visual of your drink if you're going to set it down somewhere, because you just want to prevent people from slipping anything into anyone's drink.
What do you think about the situation where you're in a bar and someone walks up to you and gives you a drink? They've seen you from across the bar and they want to give you a drink.
My thought on that is that if you see the person, if they come up to you offering you to buy a drink, you should walk up with them and order from the bartender at the same time so you can see your drink being poured. If you receive a drink from someone you don't know, that you didn't see them pour the drink, again, it's common sense, and you have to use good judgment as far as you want to accept the drink. I don't know this person. I don't know what the ulterior motives are. I would not accept a drink from a stranger, which I did not see the bartender pour the drink.
And I think that's just good common sense. So, what do you have in general for safety for Sonoma County residents who might be going down to the Castro?
Again, a lot of it has to do with common sense and good judgment. And, if you're going to come down, that's awesome. Have a great time. Go party in the Castro, wherever you are going to go in the city. But just, you want to make sure that, you come with friends, or if you don't come with friends, just to make sure that you're taken care of as far as, where you're going to go, where you're going to stay. Also, I wouldn't bring down my credit card. Just take a credit card or two that you're going to use. Don't bring your whole wallet full of cards, because if there are pickpockets that do happen in the bars, and the last thing you want to do is have your wallet full of credit cards and ID cards and social security cards, stolen
right.
from you.
Well, I know from my work with gay and lesbian youth up here in Sonoma County, that going to the Castro, especially for the first time, is a really huge deal. Is the Castro really a place for young people, for youth?
The Castro, you know, there is a lot of things to do in the Castro. The nightlife, I wouldn't necessarily say it's for less than 21, but there are great restaurants. There's a nice little new outdoor table area, relaxing area that the city installed at the corner of 17th and Market. You know, there's Collingwood Park. Dolores Park is nearby. We have the library. You know, it is. There are things for youth to do during the daytime. At nighttime, it's not really, I would say, a place for youth to hang out, especially Friday or Saturday night.
And I would imagine the bars are paying particular attention to checking IDs for young people before they come in. Is that kind of a standard practice for all the bars?
Yes, it is a standard practice for all of the bars. Even some bars even have patrol special officers, police officers standing in front, especially on a Friday and Saturday night, just to make sure there are no problems. And all the clubs do enforce 21 and over strict ID policy. You know, not only that, but the bars are liable legally if a minor gets inside and consumes and purchases alcohol. You know, that's a big violation for the bars, and that's something that they don't want to have.
Yeah, it's definitely not worth their while to collect that $5 for a drink and then end up losing their license for a month.
Correct. And amongst other things, you know, liability as far as, you know, people suing the bar, and it's just not worth it.
We've been talking with Officer Albie Esparza of the San Francisco Police Department about the events that happened at Pride and general safety concerns in the Castro. Thank you very much for being on Outbeat Now.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Well, stay with us. We're going to take a quick music break, and we'll be back with the Outbeat Youth segment.
I met a man with a gun following me from behind. When he put that gun into my back, had me frozen where I stood. And now his trouble is mine. Passed by a woman of age, noticed a vacancy sign. They said no one ever came to call, so she checked out for good. I hear the children are fine, and the children in the city don't play in the yards. Watching from the windows, they'll be safe behind the bars of freedom. It has to humble a man.
Support for Outbeat Radio and KRCB-FM comes from members and from the Advanced Fertility Associates Medical Group, providing comprehensive fertility care to men, women, and couples wishing to expand their families. Advanced technology, old-fashioned care, serving Santa Rosa and the North Bay for 25 years. You'll find them on the web at afamd.com.
And they ask so many questions. Are you black or white? Sleeping with another man and giving up your right to freedom. And the leaders of my country, well, they tell me they're my friends. If I listen carefully, I'll grow up to be them. So hooray for all the soldiers sticking to their guns. If destiny was up to me, I think I'd make a run for freedom. teach me the language of love. Unspoken and understood. After all this talk of making peace, well, I think I've heard enough. I'd close my eyes if I could. Well, hooray for conversation, trying to make some sense. Are we feeling strong enough to disarm the defense? And hooray for all the nations bleeding us to war. Only in the name of love or something that I'm not sure of. Hooray for my religion. I don't know what for, but someone said if I believe they'd open up the door to a thousand hungry people that I may never meet. Let them reach the promised land and gobble up the streets of freedom.
Listening to Outbeat Now on KRCB-FM Santa Rosa. That was Michelle Mangione with Man with a Gun from her CD Life Beneath the Sun. It's time now for the Outbeat Youth segment. Welcome to this month's edition of Outbeat Youth. I'm Greg Moralia. Outbeat Youth is a segment for and about the LGBT youth community in the greater North Bay area. This month, we're going to be talking about online safety and privacy while using social networking sites. But first, we have this month's youth profile of Bree Jane. Bree is one of the assistant interns at Positive Images, and I had a chance to sit down with her at the Positive Images Center, and here's what she had to say. Bree, welcome to Outbeat Youth.
Thanks for having me.
Well, tell us a little bit about where you grew up and what it was like for you in school.
I grew up my whole life in Novato, down in Marin County. And in school, you know, middle school always sucks. I got along with the boys better than the girls. And at that time, you know, boys and girls separate. So I felt pretty out of it. By high school, I made more friends. But in terms of coming out or anything like that, I was in total denial. Like, there's no way, you know. It was like, feel like the only gay kid, so you just don't say anything.
So did you have a pretty good awareness about who you were in middle school?
It started to hit me. I knew I was different, but then I started a secret relationship going into eighth grade. So that kind of hits you like a ton of bricks. So
secret relationship. Tell us a little bit about that.
It was just my best friend from the softball team. Neither of us, I think, really knew what was happening, and then all of a sudden it just happened. And I can't really say for her what her process was, other than we always said, like, this doesn't make us gay. Everybody does or has gay experiences all the time. I knew it was more than that. I knew that wasn't true, but I didn't want it to be true. And when you create that kind of alternate reality for yourself in this relationship, it seems like euphoric. So it's like the outside world becomes totally separate from that secret relationship.
Right. And I imagine in middle school that must have been pretty tough. I mean, did you have a GSA at your middle school?
No GSA. There's a GSA at my high school, but it was pretty low-key and quiet. You know, there were some people who went. But it was interesting because it was so quiet. It wasn't like, oh, if you're in the GSA, you're automatically gay. You know, they had pictures in the yearbook, but you look at them and it's just like normal kids that are just hanging out. But yeah, I didn't really feel like there was anything accessible for me growing up.
Right. So when you finally did make the decision to come out, what was it like?
It was pretty gnarly, actually, because I developed a pretty serious alcohol and substance abuse problem. And so I decided it wasn't working anymore. I was pretty much suicidal at that point, and I just asked for help. And what I found was once I got my head clear and I was sober, that this was the overwhelming secret that I had to come to terms with. And it was like, you know, get sober or die. But I felt like if I come out, I'm going to die. But it's obvious I have to come out in order to be sober. I met a person who had almost the exact same story as I did. And at the end of the conversation, she just said, it's okay and you're going to be okay. And for whatever reason, that worked for me. And I came out to my family and all of them said, I love you. I'm proud of you. It was awesome. I got to come out to them each individually. And it's just been awesome ever since.
That's an amazing story. And I liked what you said about coming out to them individually. I mean, do you think that that's really a good way to handle it? Or, you know, should you wait for Thanksgiving dinner and tell everybody at once?
I think individually was pretty ideal because you know how to bring it up, I think, a little better. And there's always that person that it's more nerve-wracking than most. Like, I'm really close with my mom now, but for some reason she was, like, the scariest. Even though I knew they would all be fine with it. And, of course, my parents are like, we knew since you were three. You know, we were ready for it. But, I mean, for me, it was easier doing individually rather than, you know, a big group.
So, you know, coming out obviously isn't a one-time thing. You didn't just have this conversation once and now everything with the world is right. What have you found? Has it gotten easier for you to tell people as you've gotten older?
What I came to realize is that my impression was that if I come out, it's going to, being gay is going to be my identity. And what I found is that's not true at all. It's certainly an important part of me that I truly embrace, but it's not all of me. And I think once I came to terms with that, it's just easier to be proud, you know, go to Pride and wear rainbows. And I got a rainbow sticker on the back of my car. But, you know, when you're like working, or I was coaching a 16 under softball team, it's like, you know, you walk on eggshells. You try and, again, you just kind of get a feel for, like, are they going to be okay with this? Are they not? And the way I look at it is it's like it's nobody's business anyways. If I honor you with that information, that's exactly what it is. It's an honor and a privilege. But other than that, it's like, you know, who I sleep with is not your business.
Right, right. No, I think that's a great way to look at it. So what do you like to do for fun?
I'm pretty much all over the place. I mean, I was coaching softball for a while. I played for 14 years. Pretty much done with that, but coaching I really want to get back into. Rock climbing in the gym has been an awesome outlet for growing up being such an intense athlete to still be active, but, you know, low intensity. You know, psychology is my passion, so I'll read about that stuff on my own. And, you know, just hanging with friends, you know.
So tell us about Positive Images and what is your role there now?
I'm an assistant intern with Positive Images now. I work with Aiden and obviously with Jim and all the awesome members. Me and Aiden pretty much run the meetings now. We have meetings every Thursday night from 7 to 9 at Santa Rosa High School. And Positive Images is actually really incredible right now. Working for them is a great honor.
So tell me about some of your dreams and your goals for the future.
I think I'm headed in the right direction working with Positive Images. I'm a psychology major at Sonoma State, and working with these kids has been really incredible. I know I don't necessarily want to be a therapist sitting one-on-one with people all day, but I want to work with people, and I think working for a nonprofit is a really good experience for me. So in terms of my career goals, I can't say for sure yet, but I know I'm heading in the right direction.
So what advice can you give other young gay and lesbian people your age? Let's say they're in their first or second year of college and they're not out yet. What would you tell them?
I would just say it's like, you know, coming out is a process and it's an internal one, but you definitely need people who, even if they don't understand, are just supportive. And, you know, in a general sense, if you're in Sonoma County, Positive Images is incredible. I mean, our youngest member is 12 years old, and, like, our oldest is, like, 23 or something, but we go up to 25. You know, it sounds cliche, but there is magic that happens in that room. And I know it can be hard to actually reach out and go to those groups because you're afraid of who's going to see you. So it's getting the courage to do that. And I'd also say just take your time. Like, don't feel rushed. Everyone has that internal clock where you say, I've had enough. Remember, everybody deserves to be happy, and it's not your identity. It's a part of you, but it is not all that is you.
Great. Bree, thanks for joining us tonight on Outbeat Youth.
Awesome. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Now, here's Junior with this month's movie review.
This is Junior with your movie review of the month. This film, The Kids Are All Alright, is a rare, spectacular movie with a cast at the top of their game. You have Julianne Moore, Annette Bening, and Mark Ruffalo, who go deep in their character and make their movie worthwhile. It is a warm, funny, sexy, smart film with a great script. The film specializes in gay and family content, so let me tell you a little bit about the film. Julianne Moore and Annette Bening play a lesbian couple who each have a kid from the same sperm donor. And of course, you know how kids, one day they're going to want to find out who their dad is or where they came from. After that, the film picks up with laughs and surprises. This fantastic film will even touch all those homophobes, get a better understanding that a family is a family no matter what. You will really love this film. It got 4 stars. The review is incredible. I have seen the film once already, and I am going to see it again and again and maybe even again. I love how real it is. It's a comedy, it's a drama, it's the real deal. It is rated R for language, sexual content. It runs for approximately 2 hours. You can catch this film playing at the Rialto Cinemas Lakeside. Go to rialtocinemas.com. This is Junior with your movie review of the month.
The features of social networking sites are really what define them. Make friends. Get a date. Add even more friends. Even share your favorite pictures of you holding beer. Write blogs. Make a video. And remember, you can never have too many friends. Whatever you're interested in, social networking sites have you covered. But maybe there are a few things you should think about before you trust someone online.
Most important thing on the internet is to remember that you're on the computer and you're only seeing what people show you. No one on the internet looks worse than they are in real life. Nobody. Like, if you look at someone's Facebook page, your impression of that person is never worse than your impression you'd get if you spent a day with that person. And if it is, then the design, you know, whoever designed the web page has some issues, you know, because that's not, they're always in control. They put up the pictures, they type in the words, they decide what you see about them.
But are these people really who they say they are?
The truth has no bearing on whether or not it shows up on the page. They decide what shows up by putting it in the box or pasting the picture in the box or whatever they're doing. They are the ones that decide. In the real world, whether something's true is all that there is. You see what happens. You see the truth. And online, the truth is not a factor. It could be true. It could not be true. The only thing you know is they decided to put it in there.
And we're back now, continuing our discussion about internet safety and privacy while using social networking websites. You know, I've been an avid user of the internet and social networking sites for many years. MySpace, Facebook, and Twitter are all really amazing ways of connecting with people all over the world. In fact, we use all of these social networking sites regularly here on Outbeat Youth to connect with listeners from across the country. No matter how connected you decide to be, if you're queer or straight, there are some important safety and privacy considerations for you to think about before launching yourself into cyberspace.
Facebook, YouTube, texting, this is my life. It's how I connect, share funny stuff, and make plans.
I go on Facebook every day, but even I've made mistakes, like posting something on someone's wall that I've later regretted. It was funny at the time, right? I mean, who hasn't said something mean, only to have it forwarded to the person we said it about? And whatever we post online can live there for a very, very long time. Believe it or not, a friend of mine was tagged in a picture drinking beer. It actually got her in trouble when she applied for a summer job.
Guard your privacy. What people know about you is up to you.
Next, protect your reputation. Think before you post, upload, or send. What's funny or cute today could really embarrass you tomorrow.
Nothing is private online. Anything you say or do can be copied, pasted, and sent to gazillions of people without your permission.
Assume everyone is watching. So the next time you act out something stupid, just remember that your parents, teachers, and even your enemies will be able to see it. apply the golden rule. If you don't want something done to you, then don't do it to someone else. What goes around comes around.
Don't hide. Using a fake name to say mean things is not cool. Besides, you're never as anonymous as you think. You can always be found out. The bottom line is that it's really up to us to protect ourselves, our friends, and our reputations. Things we think are funny or cool today can turn around and bite us tomorrow. Besides, this online and mobile world, it's ours. We're making it up as we go. So why not create a positive world?
One where we feel safe from being embarrassed or humiliated.
For more tips and really cool stuff, visit us at commonsense.org.
This month we asked listeners to send us their questions about online safety, and here's a couple that we received. Devin asked, is sexting really illegal? Can someone actually be arrested for it? Well, Devin, the answer is actually yes, especially if you're under 18. Sexting involves sending sexually explicit photos of yourself or someone else, or sending sexually explicit messages to someone else. And if you're under the age of 18 and you send, let's say, a naked picture of yourself or forward one that someone else gave you, it's considered distribution of child pornography, and yes, you can be arrested. Here's a little bit more on sexting.
Hi, I'm Brandon Hardesty. So apparently there's this new thing going around with teenagers nowadays that I didn't even know existed. Things like, you know, sending naked pictures of yourself to your partner through cell phones, you know, against their will, or texting them constantly, wondering where they are, or hacking their MySpace and Facebook accounts because you don't trust them enough. You know, like, you know, where years ago, if you wanted to stalk somebody, you'd have to follow them home with the headlights off, dig through their garbage, find their bank statements, maybe their social security number, and then maybe in a drunken stupor, go to a payphone around the block and call her, coaxing her to the window just so you can get a glimpse of her supple body for a brief, sad moment in your otherwise miserable life. Who wants to go through all that when you have cell phones and the internet? The thing is, technology's great. I mean, it moves us forward as a species, and we learn new and amazing things every day because of it. We cure diseases and a bunch of cool stuff. But with new technology comes new problems, and we need to deal with those problems. And if you're in a young relationship, you need to establish your digital boundaries, so to speak. Now, let's say you're not in a comfortable relationship right now. Let's say your boyfriend is pressuring you to send naked pictures of yourself to him through your cell phone. There are three people you could confront in a time like this: your parents, your guidance counselor at school, or your partner. I guess the parents make it four people, but whatever. Let's see what it would be like if you confronted your parents.
Is that what you think a cell phone is supposed to be used for, young lady? If I wanted you to take naked pictures of yourself and send it to some 15-year-old crackhead at school, I'd have bought you the camera, the darkroom.
No, hon.
Well, if that's what she wants, I mean, I'm tempted to go take a picture of my ass and send it to the boy. That'll give him a rude awakening.
No, hon.
Well, she's obviously not using a cell phone correctly. Young lady, until you can dial a phone number without taking your pants off, I'm taking your cell phone, dumping it down the garbage disposal, and flipping the switch. You can have it back in a month. Oh, and by the way, you're grounded until you're dead!
Now let's see what would happen if you confided in your guidance counselor. He did what? That's horrible. Deplorable, despicable in every possible way. Don't you think for a minute that he's gonna get away with this? Wait, that little miscreant, I'm gonna call his parents right now and tell him every... Oh, what, you don't want me to? You know what, you're right. They're probably just as sick in the head as he is. We need to take this to a higher power. We'll call the police. They'll probably cuff him as soon as he takes another picture of his little wiener. You don't want me to do that either? Well, for Pete's sake, I'm trying to help you out here. We need to get the word out. We need to let people know that this behavior will not stand. We need to tell the newspapers, the magazines, Joan Rivers, Governor Schwarzenegger, Barack Obama. We'll storm the White House. We'll storm Washington. Well, I can see it now. We lead the Crusades and walk right through the gates, walk into the Oval Office, and we tell him that your genitalia is yours to see and yours alone! And imagine all the horrible things your boyfriend might say if you confronted him. I think we should break up. Now that you've seen how every situation could play out in the worst possible way, it might not seem so bad to actually talk to someone about it. You know, your parents are more supportive than you think. your guidance counselor isn't the paparazzi, and your boyfriend, well, communication is crucial in a relationship, and he needs to hear what you have to say, whether he likes it or not.
Jessie sent us a question. She said, I'm getting hate messages from my ex-friend on Facebook. What should I do? Well, Facebook says that you can report hate messages by clicking Report Message under the name and picture of the sender. The person you are reporting will not be told by Facebook that you're reporting them. And you can also go to your privacy settings and add this person to your block list. And here's some more information about Facebook's privacy settings.
Hi, I'm Larry Maggott of ConnectSafely.org. And this introductory video is going to show you how to use Facebook's new simplified privacy controls. I'll also cover how to limit what the world can see about you, how to opt out of instant personalization, and provide a brief introduction to customizing privacy settings. One of the problems with Facebook's privacy settings were that they were just too complicated. They still give you lots of options if you want to get granular, but now you can set your basic settings on a single, more simplified page. Facebook has also reduced the information that users must make publicly available, and it's made it easier to control information given to applications. There's even a simple way to opt out of all applications. Facebook has decided that there are certain things that are always public, but not as much as used to be the case. Your name does have to be public. Your profile picture has to be public too, but you don't have to have a profile picture if you don't want one. You do have to disclose your gender and any networks you belong to, but you don't have to belong to any networks. You no longer have to disclose the pages that you like. And friends is kind of a special case. You can choose not to display your friends list on your page, but being a friend is a two-way street, and your friends have a choice as to whether to display their friends on their page. So if you're someone's friend, they can display it. And also, your friends list can be made available to applications that you put on your page. So if you really don't want anybody to know that someone's your friend, don't friend them. Let's start out with Facebook's new simplified privacy settings page. From any Facebook page, go to Account and then select Privacy Settings. That takes you to the simplified page, and you notice it may already say custom if you've earlier customized your settings, and you can leave them the way they are. Or you can select everyone, which is the most inclusive, and I don't recommend that for very many people. That makes your information available to everyone on the internet. Friends of Friends is a little more restrictive, Friends Only is the most restrictive, and Recommended is kind of a compromise where there's some is on everyone, some is Friends of Friends, and some is Friends Only. So right now, I'm going to apply these settings, and later, we'll see how we can customize it. While you're in the privacy area, check out basic directory information. This is where you configure what the world can see about you within Facebook. So click on View Settings, and notice that you can control who can search for you on Facebook, who can send you friend requests, who can send you messages, and far more. So take a look at all those options. Before I get into some of the other privacy settings, I want to talk a little bit about instant personalization. This is where Facebook works with some of its partner sites, and right now there are only a few, that allows them to access information and content that you've made available to everyone. So they're not extracting private personal information, but information that you've already decided to share with the public. But now it's kind of integrated with other sites. So for example, if you've linked Facebook to your Yelp account, you can share with your Facebook friends and others what restaurants you like. The same might be true with your music tastes on Pandora. Now, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing depends on what you want to reveal to the public. But the good news is that there's a way to turn it off. You can get to the instant personalization controls at the bottom of your privacy settings screen by looking where you see applications and websites and then clicking on Edit Your Settings. There's a bunch of options here, but just scroll down to where you see instant personalization and click Edit Settings. You can then read about all the reasons why Facebook thinks it's a good thing, but at the bottom you'll see where it says Enable Instant Personalization on Partner Websites. Uncheck it, confirm, and it's history. While the standard options may be fine for many people, it's easy to customize settings to give you even more control. So click on Customize Settings at the bottom of the privacy screen, and you'll see some other options like Post by Me, Family, Relationships, etc. Each one has a pull-down menu. For example, you could choose Everyone, that's everyone on the internet, Friends and Networks, Friends of Friends, or Friends Only. And you can even customize further. So go through all your choices and make sure that everything is to your liking. We've covered some basics, but there's a lot more to explore. So go to the bottom of any Facebook page and click on the word Privacy. That brings you to Facebook's Privacy Guide, where you can find the latest information from the company, including information on any privacy updates. But remember, anything that's digital can be copied, stored, or forwarded anytime in the future. So even if you trust your friends, there's always the possibility that one of your friends could become an ex-friend. So if anything is top secret, you might not want to share it with anyone, because it might someday be found by your grandmother, a future boss, a future love interest, or who knows, you might want to run for president someday. I'm Larry Magid of ConnectSafely.org.
You'll find a link to this tutorial and others on how to protect your privacy online on our website at outbeatyouth.com. Just click on show notes at the top of the page. We'll be right back.
The Trevor Project is the leading national organization focused on crisis and suicide prevention efforts among lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and questioning youth. If you're feeling helpless or hopeless, there's always a safe place to turn. Call the Trevor Helpline at 8664-U-TREVOR. It's free and confidential, and you can talk to someone 24 hours a day. Or visit the website at thetrevorproject.org. Be proud of who you are.
Are you looking for a place to meet other young adults just like you? Need a place to talk confidentially about how to come out or not? There are two organizations close to you and ready to help. Positive Images has peer counseling and peer support for queer youth ages 12 to 25. Learn more at www.pauseimages.org. Spectrum also provides regular meetings and peer support with groups in Novato and San Anselmo. Visit their website at www.spectrumlgbtcenter.org. And that's it for this month's edition of Outbeat Youth. Remember, you can follow us all month long on Facebook, MySpace, and Twitter. And you can always download past shows on iTunes. Thanks for listening to Outbeat Youth. Well, that wraps up this month's edition of Outbeat Now. We'll be back next month on the fourth Sunday. But in the meantime, if you'd like to listen to past editions of Outbeat Now, go to our website at www.outbeatnow.com or search for Outbeat Now on iTunes. Join us here next week on Outbeat Radio for Living Proof with Sheridan Gold and Dr. Diana Grayer. Good night, everyone. Outbeat Now is produced and engineered by Jeff Basham, Joel Bellagio, and Greg Moralia, and is a production of Outbeat Radio. Support for Outbeat Radio on KRCB-FM comes from members and from Advanced Fertility Associates Medical Group, providing comprehensive fertility care to men, women, and couples wishing to expand their families. Advanced technology, old-fashioned care, serving Santa Rosa and the North Bay for 25 years. You'll find them on the web at afamd.com. And you're listening to KRCB-FM Santa Rosa, community-powered radio. It's a little before 9 p.m. Stay with us. New Dimensions is next.